Hello, this is Marianne Howland. I'm a partner at Duffy & Knightson, and I recently sat down with Paige Flink, the CEO of The Family Place, which is a domestic violence shelter. We were able to discuss the various family law issues surrounding domestic violence. We also got to discuss the Batterers Intervention Prevention Program that The Family Place offers, along with Brave, which is an intervention program that focuses on teenagers who have either been arrested or convicted of domestic violence. There's a lot of good information in here, and I hope that you'll enjoy hearing the interview. And please email us with any questions that you may have so that we can follow up with you. Thank you. In my opinion, in the family law community, I don't think there's enough knowledge about domestic violence. We don't address it a lot. I don't think the judges address it a lot. I think we kind of all just pretend it doesn't exist unless it's egregious. So I think it's good for people to hear about it and just some myths. And then this Brave program, I didn't know y'all were doing that, which is probably just my fault for not even following it, but I don't know how new it is.
It's not new, but it's really small. It's because it's for
Okay.
juveniles. Not many juveniles get convicted of intimate partner violence. And
Right.
But we do it when we need to, and we're happy to be able to do it. But it's the tip of the big old iceberg, sort of what
Right.
of the things we do. So, also supervised visitation, is that something that we should talk about with your group here?
Yes, I do think so. And do y'all do supervised exchanges or just supervised visits? Okay.
Yeah, we have more exchanges than we have visits because, visits are limited based on capacity for one thing, but also judges are more likely just to order an exchange.
Right. So let me ask you about that. What do you think about these supervised exchanges? I guess what I would ask is there a correlation between an abusive partner and child abuse, or do you think that just supervised exchanges usually does the trick and it's really just intimate partner violence that we're addressing?
I get why the judges want the dads to have a relationship, and people like to say that he's a great dad. He just abuses his wife. I'm like, that's bullshit. Sorry. You can't have
Agreed.
those two things. You can't have
Right.
those two things. And so, excuse my French, but the judges, there's an economic reason for them to have a relationship, and sometimes the kids are they see it, they witness it, and it's terrible, but they are not hurt other than seeing their mother hurt, which is
Right.
hurts them inside, but they are not murdered. It's called Faith and Liberty's Place for Faith and
Right.
Liberty Battaglia. And so, that was a supreme example of the horrific nature that can happen when people want their kids to be the pawn. And so, anyway, but I think you can have an abuser whose target is the mother and not the kids. I think that is a true thing, but
Okay.
it doesn't make them a good person to me.
I agree. I think and I just put out an article about or just a blog entry about how domestic violence affects children, and I think that's something that the family law community doesn't think about much. Because again, I think people want to, categorize abusers as just being they're good dads, but they have this anger issue, I guess, is what they would say.
Right.
So, but obviously, if you're willing to abuse your partner, I don't know how, what stops there as the kids get older, or, and not only that, but the fact that children in homes of domestic violence, whether they witness it or not, they know what's going on. They see the precursor to it, they see the aftermath. So, if you're hiding the actual abuse, this is not a stable environment for the children, even if they don't see the physical abuse.
That's true. And also, young boys are very attached to their mothers. And so when they see their mothers hurt, they become impotent. And that is not a healthy feeling for a male because that creates this anger and this helplessness, which then I've got to either fight back, I'm going to lash back, I'm going to use my anger in other places, or I'm going to wind up thinking it's just fine. And so all of those things are not healthy for a child. And so you see many I mean, there are some men I know whose fathers abuse their mothers, and they would never, ever, ever do it. But they have a little boy still in them a lot of times. Their evolution as a as an adult was hampered because that is so debilitating to watch a love something you love. Just like when you watch someone beat your dog, it's the same thing because
Right.
you're feeling that pain for that person. And so it hurts. And then for girls, where they need to have a respectful relationship with their father, and to see that a woman is to be respected and to be treated equally and to be believed and honored and all the things that we want reciprocally in a relationship, girls see that this is the way women are treated. And so I can't tell you how many women said to me, well, my dad was not as bad to me as he was. I mean, my husband is not as, or boyfriend is not as bad to me as my dad was to my mom. Well, there you go. So I'm
Right.
settling. Oh yeah, I'm better off than my mother because he doesn't beat me every time he drinks. He just beats me every other time he drinks or whatever. You know, it's just so
Right.
it's hard. It's bad in a family, and it creates all kinds of other problems. And I just want our world to realize that if we're going to have healthy communities that function, if we don't have a family that functions, nothing else is going to really be as successful as it could be, whether learning in school or being an entrepreneur or, you know, being respectful when you use drugs and alcohol. I mean, all of those things are going to not do as well if you come from a place where the kids were hurt at home, the mom was hurt at home, the father was hurt at home, you know.
Right. And that's the thing I think that we struggle with is, you know, how do we stop family violence? And I think we spend a lot of time warning women and children who are growing up the red flags to look for. And I don't know that we spend as much time addressing behavior that is concerning that could lead to being an abuser.
You're exactly right. You are exactly right. And so I think especially the family law community has an opportunity because I know that each attorney's got an oath to take their client's needs and do the best they can for them. But I also know that an attorney is a human being who recognizes this person shouldn't really get everything they're asking for. And so, you know, putting your own ethics, not ethics maybe, but your own moral internal aside, I mean, we all have to deal with people we don't like and do the best for them. But I see family law attorneys asking for things they know is going to be bad for a kid. They know it. And so when can a family law person be a partner in this, in the reality of having conversations with their client to say, the behavior I see you exhibit is not really appropriate.
Right. Well, and I
And
think
being okay to say that, and being okay to
exactly.
say that.
Well, for me, my commitment is always, of course, to my client, but to the children as well. And just as an attorney, that I've made a commitment to our court system and our judicial system and family law and the children. For me, if I see, and I know my firm is the same way, if we see a client who's behaving in what we would consider a financially abusive way or digitally abusive or something like that, where, well, first of all, none of that's acceptable behavior. And second, we are partners with a lot of mental health professionals we say, okay, you know what might help and what the judge will want appreciate is some counseling. Let's get you into some counseling. And so that would be my next question is, I know you guys have the Batterers Intervention Prevention Program. Do you recommend that in addition to individual counseling, or what is your recommendation about that?
Well, the power of the Batterers Intervention Program is the group. And because it's an open group and it's 24 weeks, if you've committed just a, you know, most of the people come are ordered by the courts. We have some that are self-referred, wife-referred, or, you know, attorney-referred. And so they come when they come. But the beauty of a group is that I'm in week one. I just got here, but there's a person over here who's in week 10 who calls me out.
Oh,
And
that's nice.
because they're like, hold on a second, you can't say that about. And so you see this power work in the group where the person from our team is a facilitator. They're there to make sure that all the group rules are followed and that no one denigrates their partner and they own, it's like AA. Every time you get there, you have to say, why are you here? I'm here because I beat up my wife. I'm here because I punched her. I'm here because I shot her. I'm here because I did these things. You can't say I'm here because the judge sent me.
Mm-hmm.
Because that doesn't, that you're not taking ownership of it. You're just showing up because you were made to come. And so we start group there. And then after that, they have to use their name, the name, they can't call her bitch, her, slut, whore, whatever name. They have to say Paige and use their partner's name. But then they also have to own it and then talk about, you know, whatever our group topic is. And so really then the facilitator puts out, here's our conversation today is, you know, use the use of, what does cheating do to your partner? You know, cheating on your partner with another person, committing adultery, that sort of thing. So that's a conversation topic. And so they have to work through that and talk about and own that. And so they discuss among themselves and they start to see how it's not good because they are holding each other accountable. And so that peer group, it's even the same for victims, to see, for a victim to see that what he said to her is just the same thing he says to me. You know, it takes away that, wow, I'm not by myself. It's a similar power and also the power of healing that can start with this guy's a macho looking guy. You know, he's a big dude, but he's owning it. Maybe I should own it. And so you have that piece of it that helps it move along. And so I 1000% think people can change who they are if they want to do it. And so coming because you're sent is really different than choosing to come because, you know, at the end of this 24 weeks, your life is going to be better because it really is better. It isn't just their personal and intimate relationships that are better. Because, of course, how unsuccessful does it feel if you have to beat your wife to get her to sleep with you?
Right.
Or beat your wife to get her to say, to do what it is ever you think you need to have done. You know, that's not a successful relationship. You don't leave that feeling joyous and content. You feel like crap. So your life is better when you start addressing this abusive behavior because the toxic behavior, your toxic masculinity is a real thing. And we are seeing it play out, unfortunately, in our world right now in ways that magnify what people get out of toxic masculinity, but also how damaging it can be to people. And so in the workplace, if you treat women the same way you treat your wife, you're going to have a toxic work environment. And so if you learn that there's everybody is equal and respecting everyone is where our starting point is, takes a lot of time to do that and to undo it, but at least we're able to get that process started. So it works. And I would, if I had the chance to get a group of men together that would own their behavior before they got arrested, wouldn't that be good?
Right. So, right. Because then if we can get this, take the stigma away of counseling or admitting to being an abuser and just really just saying, okay, you're in, let's meet you where you are. You're in this place where you think it's okay for whatever reason to control your partner, to use fear, to use threats or violence. Let's figure out a better way for you to be, because like you said, that's not, you're not happy with that. And what about the cycle of regret and remorse? And then here we go again, you know? And so that's just, it's, that's no way to live for the abuser or the victim. And so I agree if we could reach them sooner, but I think we have to take a lot of the stigma away. And of course, if we're talking about toxic masculinity, it's a societal issue really at that point.
It is. It is. It is. But I think one of the point you just made is this, that asking for help. We have, again, socialized men into thinking that you have to know what's going on. You have to be in charge. You have to be the strong one. You can't be vulnerable. You can't admit failure. You can't admit not knowing something. And so, therefore, if you aren't willing to ask for help, I mean, it's a silly stereotype, but in a way, A man won't stop and ask for help at the gas station. Back before we
Right.
had maps, on
Right.
your phone, like, honey, we're lost. I know where we're going. I mean, my dad is a perfect example, and he wasn't toxic, but he would not stop and ask for help because that admitted to his family in the back seat that he didn't know what the heck was happening, where he was going. So we wound up in a dead end one time. We kept saying, just stop at the gas station. But it was, he was like, I know where the Hermitage is and we're going. And we did not find the Hermitage. But it's an example of he didn't want to look weak to his two little kids in the back seat. I would have been so much happier to not be lost than to
Right.
I wouldn't have judged him for not knowing where he was going. But people don't want to ask for help. Culturally, we see it especially in some communities, in an African American community, telling your business to other people is something that doesn't really happen. So that's what therapy feels like if you're going to go tell your business, except to your preacher, a different thing. But also that it's just therapy means you're sick. Therapy doesn't mean you're sick at all. Therapy means you're smart, that you want to feel better. It's just like going to a doctor. It's your feelings doctor instead of the foot doctor, and that people, it's okay. It is, it's, it, but we have to get people to realize asking for help is powerful. And, those 12-step programs are really built on that. First, you have to say, I made a mistake. And second, you just have to say, I need help changing. And so that's really kind of what the root of all of this is.
And I think two things. One, we talk about women calling a hotline if they think that their partner is an abuser, and we've got a lot of options for women, but we don't have the same thing for men. I mean, we don't, and I don't know that even a man would call a hotline. Maybe he would if it was run by men. Or something like that. But it's there's truly not a lot of options for a man to say, I think I might abuse my partner today. I need help. I need some guidance.
So I've never thought of marketing the hotlines differently, but that's a brilliant idea. But we do have a shelter for men who are victims. The Family Place does. And so we're the only one in the state of Texas that separates the men out. Some of the shelters take men in their building, but we just sort of decided to because of provincial or whatever you want to call it, that we were just going to separate the genders. And it has actually turned to be very powerful because I thought everybody that came was going to be a gay man.
Right. That's what I would have
I
thought.
was totally wrong. 60% of the men who come are there because of a female partner. And so having that many men who are also abused by a woman, they get so much out of sitting and talking to each other. It's remarkable. And there are gay men there too, but it's sort of a, it's all it, you know, there's just this feeling of similarity. And so that's been really great. But I never thought about marketing a hotline for people who might hurt someone. I don't know what that's a really, never thought of that, but that could be an interesting thing or a campaign, sort of like
Can we get
the,
funding or something just to think about? We have suicide hotlines, we have
I
child
know,
abuse hotlines where I feel like I'm going to hurt my child, that kind of thing. But we don't have where a man may be able to be talked down from that and redirected. So
Yes,
that's
I never
interesting.
even, yeah, I'm Mary Ann, way to go. You just,
Well,
I mean,
thank
that's
you.
a gift. No, seriously, that's a gift because I don't know, I just did this television, oh my God, an interview on TV about this murder that happened where the man shot his wife in front of their three babies on Sunday night. And it's a reporter who I've worked with forever because I've been at this forever. And she was like, Paige, do you feel hopeless? And I said, yeah, sometimes I do feel hopeless because we have been talking. The Family Place has been around for 42 years. And that's really just two generations of people. The laws have only been since really the mid-90s that we really and truly, the Violence Against Women Act really, made, and O.J. Simpson made it where people actually recognize this is a societal problem that happens to anyone. And so it's here, so that's not 30 years, almost 30 years. So we still have, to break, where, I don't know how long it took to get seatbelts where people would wear a seatbelt, but to change the dynamic. But I never thought of talking to the person who was hurting other people as opposed to talking to the person who has been hurt. Because you said it, we put all the onus is on the victim to get out, as opposed to, can we do something to help the abuser stop before they get farther along? So I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to
I
figure
would
something
love
out.
to be a part of that.
I
If you
want you
need
to,
help,
yes.
because I
Yes.
think, I mean, this is my passion too. And as a family law attorney, I don't always get the cases I want. Sometimes I'm getting cases where it's just two people who hate each other, but my passion is let's make sure everyone's okay. Is someone being hurt or abused? Let's get you help. Let's get you help for abusing.
Well, and maybe we could do a pilot project if you all have, and women or men. I mean, we generally think of, like, we have men that are sent to our Betters program, and we have women who are sent to our Betters program, but we don't mix those genders either. But if you all had enough, a critical mass would be three men, and just to sit with three men in a room who all are in the same place, if they have these toxic bad behaviors, financial abuse, religious abuse, sexual abuse, demanding sex just because she's your wife, that is still, she can say no, and that is a crime. And so, and to get men together and just see what it would be like to have a pre-adjudication, pre-arrest. So, before you commit the crime, while you're, but might be interesting to try to do like a support group there at the
Right,
law
like
firm
I'm
or
seeing
something.
this behavior in you, client. Can I suggest this? Because this, you, and I think some of the motivation has to be, even if you're not ready to say that she doesn't deserve this behavior or that you're wrong, this will affect you negatively in court, and this will affect your custody. This will affect your case. These behaviors are, I will say, our Dallas judges are pretty well trained on domestic violence, and they understand, and the Collin County judges now they're really getting more family law cases up there, so they're just seeing it more. We know it crosses class lines and everything, so.
Yeah, we need to work with Collin County. We opened a counseling center in McKinney, and we need to they have a family violence sort of domestic violence unit in the district attorney's office, but the fact that they have criminal and family law all mixed together kind of creates that county is getting so big, they need to do what we've done in Dallas, which is a family district court and have criminal court, a civil court and a criminal court or something, separate those out because it's hard to be good at everything.
Yeah, it is.
And
And it's
so.
if you're looking at the burdens of proof and all of that, like it really it the criminal code is very different from the family code and the burdens of proof and all of that. So I agree.
That's
I
right.
think especially because family law affects children's lives and adults' lives forever until the next order or until something bad happens, so we have to get it right,
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it would be and what we see in our visitation center is that a lot of these dads haven't had good relationships anyway with their kids. It's not, and so they come to Faith and Liberty's place, they don't even know how to be. And so helping them parent, we started out with a strictly observing, I mean like observing, just observing. And then we tried to move into a little bit more of a therapeutic model, trauma informed a little bit, not really therapeutic, but you know what I mean? Not therapy, but still, hey, redirect and coaching, and as opposed to just sitting back and monitoring,
Right,
that
and
we actually
watching.
helped engage. We helped engage. And so, those are places for us to explore, expanding that piece of it. To be sure, we try to stay not and not get dragged into the courts because, the Department of Justice partially funds Faith and Liberty's place, and they won't let us charge. They don't pay for all of it. They pay for less than half of it, but they won't let it. We used to charge a fee, and we had a sliding fee scale, but so now it's all free. And there are people who absolutely could pay, and there are some people who couldn't pay. And so, anyway, if they to be able to do it the way we want to do it, we have to and should do it. It's really an expensive model because it's one-on-one. We have one supervisor and one family. And so those are, it's, it, it's really an arm of the Dallas County court. So we got Dallas County to give us a little more money for it as well, because the judges have to have someplace to send someone.
Right. So,
And
and that the responsibility doesn't end there when we just, the judges just say, go to Faith and Liberty's place, and none of us are thinking about scheduling or fees or anything else. And that, I mean, that's, it takes money and time to run that and to offer that service.
yeah, it really does. So, we the balance of it, we privately fundraise so that people can go, and it is an asset for the community. But it and we didn't stop during COVID at all. We continued to provide the face-to-face services, because we don't want anyone to miss, get in contempt or do any of those things that, we want to fulfill their obligations. Plus, we didn't want to Zoom, because we can't control what that person does in their home. We can control it when we're seeing you in our office. And
Right.
those the visitations are intense. There's a reason that person can't be by themselves with that kid. And so
Right.
it's intense for everybody. The exchanges are generally these two, as you said, these two people hate each other.
Right.
And so eloquently said.
Yes.
But it's important. It's a really it's an important service. And I ran into the other night, I ran into the guy who convinced who got so when Faith and Liberty were murdered, I don't know if you know the story,
Yes.
right? Were you here in 2001?
I was not practicing. I started practicing in 2006, but I was there at y'all's facility for a little while as an in-house attorney right around that time in 2006, and that's how I heard about the story, but it was awful.
Yes, and so it was awful. And this guy that I ran into came to a family place event I hadn't seen since we opened Faith and Liberty's place, which is in 2001, and or 2002 basically when we got it open. But that murder happened in May of 2001, and this guy's name is Stan. And Stan went, and he had to go to the apartment to get the girl's stuff. He went there, which was pretty terrible, because he was really good friends with the mom and the mom's best friend. And so, but he also got Tony Goolsbee, who was the state rep at the time, who filed and passed a bill in 2 weeks at the end of the legislative session that said, that made the law that says the judge shall ask or whatever to protect the children, whatever that phrase is. If we didn't have that, none of this really would have happened. We would, we took over a supervised visitation center that charged $75 an hour for visitation. They were the only place in town. It was called the Family Connection, and it was the only place you could go. And so, of course, the people without means weren't getting supervised at all. And so we absorbed their caseload, and then we started, our facility at over where it is on Child and Family Guidance. But it was that one thing, Stan getting Tony Goolsbee to do that, that really changed the whole trajectory, so that the murderer of those precious girls had a lifelong effect on our community by making people be supervised. And so at that time, we had already in our strategy and strategic plan had known this was an issue. We were really thinking more of exchanges, because our clients would go to the McDonald's and exchange and get beat up, or he'd come pick them up at the house and get beat up. And so we knew we needed something. So it was already on our radar. Then this thing happened, and then the law changed, and all of it was like just, this convergence of situations that made it where it was possible to do supervision. So, think of that was 2001, where that's 19 years ago, 18 years, I guess, that since we've been taking clients to of our own at Faith and Liberty's place. And there's probably 200, 300 families a year that cycle through. Some have been visiting for 3 or 4 years, and the kids are have a, they finally age out. But still, that's thousands of people who didn't get kidnapped. We've had some tough situations happen where the guys showed up and really, tried to run her over in the parking lot, or got her by the hair and dragged her across the parking lot. Where were they? We've got a police officer there. We were able to make an arrest. But, the goal of that program is that the kids don't see the parents fight, and that the kids don't get they don't get kidnapped, which is a real thing.
So I want to talk about the common myths about domestic violence, and part of that, I think, is in the family law community, I think a lot of us are numb to it or think it's exaggerated or it's used as a tool to get what you want in court by making a claim of domestic violence. And so I see that a lot. I see a very callous attitude toward domestic violence. And I do think some of it plays into this idea that only certain types of women are victims. And so in my opinion, that's a huge myth of domestic violence. But I wanted to hear from you. First of all, is it a serious issue? And what are some myths? And how can we dispel those myths so that everybody can take it as seriously as we should?
Yeah, so it is a serious issue. It is a life and death issue. In 2019 in Dallas, there were 14 women killed by their intimate partner. Male intimate partner.
In Dallas, just in Dallas, not Dallas. In Texas, right.
Just in Dallas. In Texas in 2019, men and women, women killed by men. There were 151 women killed by men, one woman killed by a woman. And then there were over 32 men killed by women. And so all in, men killed by men. So all in, it was over 180 Texans in 2019 that were murdered by their intimate partner. And so, you know, that's a very large number. It's about the same as it's been. So if you think about, I get frustrated, you know, despondent sometimes, but still our population is larger and our numbers haven't grown that much. So that does mean that we're making an impact on it.
Right.
But it is lethal, and it can happen to anyone across, as you said, all racial and economic lines. But I will say that women who live in poverty are more trapped, and women of color are. So when I mentioned 14 women that were murdered in 2019 in Dallas by men, 9 of those women were Black women. And so Black women are getting killed more than other races to their percent of the population. So there is an issue. And so we have actually a group of Black women from the Family Place staff and our board are put together the African American Domestic Violence Coalition to talk about it. And so in January, I'm hopeful that we're going to get together people from that community. It's not me, but people from the leadership in their own community to say, and to get a lot of men there to say, Black men, why are we killing our Black women? Right. What is this about? And, you know, they want to lead and reflect and direct it, but it still is an issue that is, you know, needs to be talked about. And it all kind of bleeds over into poverty and as well as racial injustice.
Right.
So there are a lot of elements of the whole thing that are as a community together. So as an ally, I want to support that work, but they, as a community, will address it themselves,
right.
Sort of. So it isn't a myth that people of color are overrepresented. It is a fact. But I do see highly educated women who aren't going to tell a soul because they're highly educated and they live on Beverly Drive and they go to this country club and their kids go to this private school and they don't want to upset that. Mm-hmm. So sometimes women of means are trapped worse than a woman who doesn't have that much to give up because she lives in poverty as it is.
Right.
That woman on Beverly Drive may look like she's got everything in the world, but she's got nothing. Her name's not any of the deeds. She doesn't have the credit card. It's his. She doesn't know what's on the bank account. She's protected and harmed all at the same time. And so if she left, her fear is real, which is, I haven't worked in 15 years. How am I going to support my kids? And look what they would have to sacrifice if I go and take them with me. So all of those things just really make it hard and complicated to address because there are so many nuances to it. And, you know, people talk about mutual violence. That's another myth that they say, well, they fight all the time. And so, you know, it is a volatile situation, but there still is one of the people that has the power.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's a power imbalance in these relationships. And it is not that I've just lost my temper. That's not even a thing. You know,
That's
it is.
definitely something I think we need to address, because I think there's this perception that it's an anger issue, and that these abusers are losing control, and that's what the issue is. And if everybody would just act right and not enrage them, then there wouldn't be this issue. But that's not the case, because these abusers are all about control, and they are able to control themselves in a myriad of other places, including their work and out in public. They're not hitting their boss for making them angry or things like that. So this idea of, well, if you just wouldn't make him mad, or he just maybe needs some temper control, that's a huge myth, I think, that needs to be dispelled.
Absolutely. You're exactly right. And so anger management is a misnomer, because they totally manage their anger. They use it when they need it. They use it when it works. They know when to behave in one way and when to behave in the other. So, they are all in about the control. And so you do have some people who the road rage and different kinds of things, but that's different than I'm using my power over this human being. And so there is a commonality. I mean, I want to go back and talk about that, the road rage thing. Blaming someone else for your behavior is a typical behavior that happens with an abuser. So you cut me off in the road. I made a mistake, but it was your fault. That's a typical behavior for an abusive, narcissistic person. I mean, there definitely are personalities that we have a tendency to be more of an abuser than others. But it is not about anger. I know exactly what I'm doing. And actually, there's studies that show that the more violent the abuser, the more they can actually control their whole being. So when they get still and calm, that's when it actually is about to get worse, as opposed
Wow.
to verbally flailing. This is the cobra kind of thing. All of a sudden, suddenly he's about to strike. And so he's like regulating his heartbeat and everything, because he's totally in control of what he's about to do. And so that's a scary abuser.
For
And
sure.
they're yeah. So and there's a continuum of everything. And not every abuser beats his wife. He just cheats on her all the time. That's abusive. But I don't have a bruise to show for it. But my self-esteem is terrible, because why can't I satisfy him? Why can't he love me? Why, and those kinds of things. And so it's a continuum. And so the mistakes we make in the community is she didn't have any bruises. I didn't have any bruises, so I'm not abused. Yeah, you are.
Right. And that's, I think, women tend to say, no, there's no domestic violence. And even things like punching walls, throwing things, not letting you leave, like those are all things that are indicative of domestic violence or are abuse. But I think as a society, we've downplayed the treatment of women, or victims, or just honestly, the treatment of women, to the point where all of that is acceptable until you hit a woman. Then you're
Right.
crossing a line, right? So if you have all the bank accounts in your name, you give her an allowance, she doesn't have any access to that. You verbally abuse her, you follow her, you stalk her, you insist on looking at her phone, you isolate her, you throw things. None of that is reaching this level of as what society looks at is, okay, that's abuse, and so to me, that's the concerning thing, is how much is dismissed.
It is dismissed. And I mean, as a society, we also feel like we have to be a pair. You have to be, hopefully young women now know that they can make it on their own, and they don't have to have a boyfriend. But if you think about the first thing they'll ask some little kid in kindergarten is, who's your girlfriend? I'm like, well, first of all, what if he's not straight? I mean, he
Exactly.
doesn't know it. I mean,
Right.
at
He
five, he
doesn't
may not
need a
know, but
girlfriend.
still,
What about his boyfriend?
exactly.
Yeah.
I know. But even then, I mean, I have a 32 and a 29-year-old son, and I'll have to see friends that they went to high school with, or moms that the kids they went to high school with. The first thing out of their mouth is, dude, are they married? I'm like, no. But how about, where do they live? And What do they
What are they
do? What can,
doing?
what makes them happy? And what are they invested in? And I mean, committed to, supposed to. I mean, I know it's just a conversation starter, but it is also a typical of the society that that's how we measure. It's 32, they should be married by now, and so that's an undoing, and that's a socioeconomic thing in a lot of cases too. In a community thing, because of where my kids went to school, but still, it's how we have to help women see they have value, because you also have to ask for value. You have to believe you have value to demand value. And so that's why I go back to little girls watching their mothers treated this way. They won't value themselves because their mother didn't value themselves. And so how can you expect your daughter to expect more of herself if she didn't see it to model that behavior?
And one of my favorite sayings about how kids learn is more is caught than taught. And I think that's so true, because you can tell your kids all day how you think they should have a healthy relationship and what that looks like. But if they're not seeing that, and I'm not saying, I mean, healthy relationships are hard to come by. I agree. But then don't be in one is, I think there's, especially in the family law community, if you're asking your client who's the victim, why did you stay? Most of the time it's economic or for the kids, right? There's this idea that a two parent household at all costs is better than a one parent stable, safe household. And we never fought in front of the kids. And so that's good enough, but I mean, and I think that's the other thing for me is I'm wondering if there's some facts out there that we are not commonly known, because we certainly have a lot of myths about domestic violence. But like you said, the women, there are men who are victims of women who are committing domestic violence. And I assume that you believe those men and that they're being truthful. Is that?
We believe if the person, we don't judge whether you're telling the truth or not. That's not what our job is. You've come to us to ask for help, and we're going to meet you where you are and help you. And so, do some people come in and, try to make it seem like they're a victim of domestic violence for another purpose, whether it's custody or things like that? That happens, but it's the minority. And so, for a man to call our hotline and say, I'm being abused, imagine he's not just asking for help, but he's also admitting vulnerability. So that is a really, really hard thing for a man to say. And so we do believe them when they call us, and then we talk, bring them in, or they can come for counseling. They don't have to come to shelter. We have a support group for men that are victims. That we treat them just like the women. And so because it shouldn't happen to anyone. And so, but it is really hard. And a lot of men don't fight back. She hits them and they don't fight back because they know if they do fight back, they for sure will get arrested. And so, they walk away is really what we encourage them to do. As a victim, as they really do need to just get themselves out. I mean, but I've seen men that were run over. I've seen men that were beat with a baseball bat. I've seen men that had for real hot grease thrown at them. I
Oh,
mean, all of
gosh.
those things, just like we think. And it seems stereotypical, but it's also factual. And so, and what's amazing is when you like, especially the first man who stayed in our shelter, they were so grateful. They couldn't believe we said yes when we had a place to help them. They didn't realize, they just, and we've had men from all over the country come here because it is, especially men with kids, it's the only place where you can, a man can bring his kids in the whole state. I mean, the whole country. There's a shelter for men in Conway, Arkansas, that only men with not without kids can't come with kids. And some of the other places men can take their kids and stay, in a women's shelter. But a man with a 2 year, I mean, seeing this guy with this 2 year old baby, and he's parenting and he's trying to be the primary caregiver and get the kid to, potty training and all of those things that we expect as a woman's job, this was the man's job. So, we've taken men into our transitional housing program and helped them, be better parents and Because a lot of people in this environment are not good parents because they don't have time to be a good parent. They're busy deflecting and keeping the kids quiet. And a lot of times they hit the kids to stop crying because the abusive partner wants that crying to stop. And so there's a lot of this kind of force and not actually having to use timeout and all the things we have to progressively use with kids to teach them to monitor and regulate their own behavior. So, but all that to say that there are a man that's a victim feels vulnerable and shamed and just like a woman who's a victim. So they have the very same emotional feelings as a woman that who has been victimized. Less likely that they've been sexually victimized unless it was a male partner. But the emotional, a lot of times there's financial abuse because the women have the job and the men don't, and that sort of thing. So it's they're very, very similar. It's just society treats them very differently.
And that's it, and I think that's hard for advocates of victims of domestic violence to understand is that because I'll tell you in the family law community, 9 times out of 10, if a woman says her husband was abusive, he'll say she was abusive to him, and he'll say, I'm scared of her. And so it seems retaliatory to me, and it seems like a lie because most of the time, if she was violent with him, it was in self-defense. There's a huge disparity between their sizes and, the power and even the power structure in the home of who gets to go where and what and who gets how much money. So for me, it seems like just again blaming the victim and saying, well, she was violent with me. And so it's hard to, as an advocate, it's hard to say, but the reality is it does happen to men too. And I think we have to, as a someone on this side of it, I have to accept that and not be judgmental or skeptical, I would say.
Yeah, that's right. And so we tend to not believe, but then there are people who don't believe the women either. I mean, it's interesting to watch. But you talked about the disparity of size and that sort of thing, and that is definitely a real thing. But there are other but the language, sometimes the language that you hear people use when he starts calling her crazy, that whole she drinks too much, she's a terrible, when the denigrating things, sometimes it's true she drinks too much. Absolutely, that can be a true statement. But you start hearing the, well, she just can't do anything right, and if I've had to do this and I've had to do that, those are warning clues. Those are clues that they're kind of gaslighting her. And so that is part of an abusive behavior, is to denigrate that person so much that they start to believe that, well, maybe I am crazy. And so, when I mean, I've seen men who, I know of women who've been put in an institution that he convinced her she was crazy, and just so that he could get custody of the kids. I mean, I've just seen in my long career, I've seen every bad thing, as most of the people in the family law community have also. And so sort of what you go into it is, what I'm evaluating the situation and what words and language do I hear? Because if you talk to someone long enough, you can tell what their belief system is. And the more fundamental their belief system and the more fundamental their religious background, the more likely they are to think, and I mean any religion, that the women are here and the men are ab above them.
Yeah, I
And
agree.
so,
And because that is something that is so ingrained, if they are part of any religion and that's part of their background and that's a serious part, then that is really hard because those lessons started being taught before really, healthy sense of skepticism or critical thinking kicked in. And so it's like these lessons from childhood have just become, and it's just a tautology at that point. It's like, this is the way it is because this is the way it is. The end, and so I
yeah.
think that they don't, there is no critical thinking that is applied to those beliefs. And so that's what's, and if it is, it's not nearly as powerful as the ingrained idea of their religion and how women are treated and all that. So that's definitely a concern.
Yeah, and so I mean that's another, if you're, I mean, because I'm trying to think what would be valuable to an attorney to think how would I evaluate someone. I think it's looking at their whole picture. And, you know, sort of looking at a personality profile, because there are profiles of the person who's more likely to be an abuser, and different types of personalities, especially narcissism, which tends to be the one that we see the most of. I mean, there are some people who have head injuries. There are some people who have PTSD whose behaviors come out as abusive, but a person who has a general narcissism as their place of operating first, they're a lot harder to deal with when you're trying to get things equal, because why would it be? I'm better. So
It's for
that,
me.
forget that. Yeah, forget that. So that, but also the fundamental background that they come from, and just their what their social norms are and their acceptance of other types of you know behaviors. And like, if they met her and got married in a week, that's a bad sign. If he moved on her that fast, that instant connection isn't a real thing. So,
Right.
you
They're
know.
just trying to tamp down the behavior for a little while until it's locked in, right? And then,
Yeah.
you know,
Yeah.
so that's the other thing I think women need to hear is that any woman can truly end up being a victim of abuse, because it really doesn't start out with him hitting you.
That's exactly right. No, I mean, there are warning signs. What the first one is that they get too close too fast, that they want instantly want to possess you and to adore you and to put you on a pedestal before they even know you. So that's a warning sign. It feels fabulous when it happens, especially if you're heartbroken by whatever else happened to you earlier. You're going to be feeling, oh my gosh, finally someone really loves me. But not if it's date two and they think, you know, I mean, you still don't even, you know who I vote for. So how are you going to know if you
How
love
do
me or
you know if you like me?
not? But also then like the tracking, you mentioned it earlier, but always having to know exactly where you are. Again, especially if you're a teenager, you think he loves me.
It's so
All you
romantic.
It is so romantic to be watched over and cared for. And, you know, if I've romanticized my Prince Charming and all of that kind of an attitude, but knowing where you are means that they're starting to control you. And that needs to be something to watch for, because controlling behaviors don't get less when you become their possession, they get more. Isolation from friends and family, again, it is totally something that people think, well, he just wants to be with me every minute. But yeah, that's because he wants to know where you are every minute. And so your girlfriends aren't good for you. Your mother is boring. Your mother always, you're never happy when you come back to your mom from your mom's house, so don't go to your mother's anymore. So that whole isolation, and we talked about road rage and that also, but blaming somebody for their feelings. You make me mad. You do this to me, as opposed to I'm mad. And so, you know, those I words are really important. Cruelty to animals. A person who is whose dog poops on the floor and then they beat the fool out of them, that's a bad sign. That is a bad, bad sign. And so, because there's a vulnerable, less than being that this person can harm, and they don't have the empathy for it. You know, there's another, like, people who they push you, they play, you know, the playful use of force and stuff like that may feel like, oh, we're just joking around, he's just tickling me, but it won't stop when you say stop. That's not a good sign. The mood swings are also indicative of someone who isn't regulating themselves, and so you should watch out for something like that. And literally, the control of the finances. If you don't have, I mean, I'm old school. I've been married a long time. We have a joint checking account. People cannot believe that my husband and I, that I don't have my own bank account. I mean, so I would never, ever, ever, if I had a daughter, let her have. But you know, it just happened, and that's the way it is. And thankfully, it's fine. But still, that whole financial commingling is a big deal. And so an allowance is disgusting.
It's repulsive. And it's really saying, I
Disgusting.
own you. I own
Yes.
your ability to provide for yourself, and I can decide what is appropriate and what isn't, and you can check with me, almost as if he's her father. And it's just, I mean, if you need any more proof that this is an unbalanced, unequal
Yes.
relationship,
Exactly.
you don't get to have access to the household money. So, and you know, I mean, as a family law attorney, I think every time I'm so surprised, but there are so many women who come in and say, yeah, I've just never had access to the accounts. And it's upsetting that it's 2020 and that's still, but I do think there's been a backlash against feminism and equal rights. And so women pride themselves on a traditional household, and this is my role is this and his role is that. And that's fine until it's not, right? And you need to get out, or you need to go to the store and he's cut off your credit card. So it's, but those are good red flags to look out for women. But I think, you know, again, like we said at the beginning, for society, it has to be a lot of more focus on why are people abusing. And so, I think, and we've just got a long way to go on that, but recognizing the different forms of abuse and giving the victims a voice and saying, yes, it was abuse, even though he didn't choke you. You know, I think that's taking us further. Which is helpful. So, well, I've kept you for an hour. Is there anything else that you think we didn't touch on that you want to mention?
Yeah, let me think about that, because I think that one thing that is important is that people who experience this don't feel judged. So, like, we often have women who come in and like, I'm so stupid, I let this happen.
Right.
And that's going to happen, I'm sure, in your environment, as women putting themselves down. And the main thing is that you also, that people feel supported, that it happened to them. They didn't do it. It was done to them. And so it is true that they stayed. That is a true statement. But I'm not judging you for staying, because there are so many reasons why you might have stayed. It's just, now, how are you going to get out of it? And so I once heard, there was this a meaningful lesson to me. So we help survivors of incest, people that are adults, but when they were children, they were sexually abused, and it's long past anything to go to, you know, Children's Advocacy Center or anything like that. And there was this woman, an adult woman, who was talking about when she was a little girl and the terrible things that her dad would do to her. But she said, I started drinking when I was 11 years old. And she has carried, and she said, I used to drink till I wouldn't feel. And the therapist said to her, you were smart. You were trying to not, you knew what you were doing, and it was okay. You were smart enough to make yourself, to help yourself survive. Something was horrible. So now we know that you have a coping mechanism. How can we find a different, because she had still abusing alcohol through this whole time, but it started when she was being sexually abused. But rather than judging her for that, it was to say, weren't you smart to figure that out? Okay, but that's not going to work anymore. What coping mechanism can we help you with? What tools can you put in your toolbox that will help you let that feeling go and realize to build on something else? And so as family law attorneys, to be able to not say, why did you stay, or how could you let him do that to you, but instead saying, I can hear how terrible that was that it happened to you. What do you want to have happen? You know, that is such an important message, to empower someone who's experienced some of the things that your clients and our clients have experienced.
Yes, I think that's a great message for family law attorneys and for our community, is to not buy into blame or even agree, yes, you should have left sooner or whatever. Just, okay, that happened to you. Let's figure this next step out. And I agree. I think that's a great message for us to end on. And thank you so much, Paige. I really appreciate it. And please keep me posted about the, if I can help with that hotline or,
I will. I've got it written down.
Okay,
yes, I've got it written down.
I'm going to talk to them and say, sure, we know men right now that could use this. So let's get this going. So,
yeah. Because I have, we just hired a guy who had been in our, actually had worked in our batterers program, but he has gotten his master's in social work, and he wants to work with men. But he's got a master's level. So he would be the perfect person because he knows both, he knows the batterer and he knows the male, and he's working with male victims now.
Yeah.
So he's got both sides of it. And I think he could be a great person to be the one that would, you know, take the call. So
yes.
Anyway,
okay.
I'm going to work on that.
Okay, great. All right. Well, keep
Thanks,
me posted.
Marianne.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Bye. You too. Bye-bye.